Hello and a warm welcome to the Mission Shunya podcast. A big thanks to all the feedback in recent weeks after the release of episodes centered around COVID-19. If you haven't listened to it yet, please check the playlist on the podcast channel. We will be coming back to the impact of COVID-19 on this transition to the zero carbon economy sometime later again. But until then, the new episodes will again feature regular stories from the global decarbonization. When the UK government announced its intent to achieve net zero emissions by 2050, it became the first major country to make the net zero commitment. On this episode, we will listen to the work done by UK Fires, a research group sponsored by the UK government to support it in its transition towards the net zero goal. The UK Fires team released its first report, The Absolute Zero, towards the end of 2019. So, what does it conclude? As always, I have an expert on the show to discuss the topic. So, who's my guest for today?
I'm André Cabrera-Serrano. I'm part of the UK Fires team, and I'm a university lecturer in engineering, environment, and sustainable development in Cambridge.
So, Andrew, let's begin by listening to your background. You are at the University of Cambridge, but how did you get there?
So I finished my PhD in the University of Lisbon, actually, where I was looking into ways of measuring energy efficiency in industrial systems and across the entire countries in Europe. And then I took a postdoc position in the University of Cambridge in the Department of Engineering about 6 years ago. Working with in the group of Professor Julian Allwood. And now recently this year, I got a university lectureship in engineering, environment, and sustainable development. So that has been my trajectory so far.
Industrial ecology is something that is of real great interest to you. So why industrial ecology?
So industrial ecology, because more about the questions that we are able to answer using the tools of industrial ecology rather than focusing on the methodologies themselves. So I'm mostly interested in exploring new ways of reducing greenhouse gas emissions at a faster pace that we are currently doing to meet international climate pledges, because although we know some things that we can do to reduce emissions, change is slow and progress has been slow, and we need to step up that change if we are serious in meeting those pledges.
That's a well-put answer. But as part of research, you looked at industrial ecology in developing world, the developed world. So what is a major difference that you see between a developing country to a developed country in terms of how they can attack this kind of emissions?
So there are, of course, different tools and different strategies, because the configuration of energy and material systems in different types of countries, of course, very distinct. So what we need to understand, and industrial ecology gives us tools to do that, is how can we identify new configurations in the way we use the energy and material systems to supply our current and future needs with less demand and emissions. And we need to be creative in the ways we satisfy our needs using less resources. That's the key goal of this kind of research.
That's an interesting approach to reducing emissions, because, I mean, that clearly tells people on how we can reduce emissions. Otherwise, the general statements that generally people tend to hear from government, cities, or corporations is that we will reduce emissions by 2030, 2040, 2050, and things like that. So road to zero emissions is kind of the de facto choice or de facto statements for many international governments. And UK has been no different. UK has definitely made commitments to reduce emissions. And they have in fact started sponsored a project for that. So how did you get involved in the UK Fires project?
So I was involved in it since the start. So in the core team who wrote the grant proposal that was then approved. So we realized precisely that progress in reducing emissions has been slow, although we know a few things that we should do So we need to understand better how can we influence political and business decision making to bring about change. And we need to focus on key sectors that we hope are the key ones to change this configuration of energy and material systems. So that was the main idea behind the UK fires. And in particular, in industrial strategy, because industry accounts for such a large share of emissions, that has lots of implications across supply chains, that's definitely an important sector to look at.
That's rightly said. Industry has a major part in the entire ecosystem, and reducing emissions in industries is one key aspect of it. So the UK Fires project is a big project, is a multi-year project, I'm given to understand. But the recent report, the Road to Zero report, is a good summary, a good starting point. How long did the report take to get published right from start? And so where do we see the next steps in this project?
Yes, thank you. So the Absolute Zero report is actually the very first deliverable of this project. So it was produced only a bit more, around 9 months into the project. And it was the result of only a few months of work. So it was the first deliverable to set the scene for what we expect to be able to develop further.
Andrew, if you can begin by looking at the summary of the Absolute Zero report, how do you summarize the report?
So the main goal was trying to understand how can we meet the current new target in the UK, which is reducing 100% of emissions within the next 30 years, so by 2050. But how can we make sure that we do that in a credible and realistic way? Because most of the options nowadays rely on deploying more renewable energy and, most importantly, in some so-called negative emissions technologies, such as CCS or carbon capture and storage technologies. Although we need to think about how fast these technologies can be deployed on top of all the technical barriers that I can talk later. But there will certainly be a gap between what's going to be the demand for energy and services in 2050 and the availability of clean energy sources by then. Because those technologies are unlikely to be deployed at scale to offset the scale of emissions that we are currently producing. So how can we actually close this gap? And actually, we think that we can close this gap between demand and availability with resource efficiency. So, and this report shows how we could use current technologies to close this gap. And what would that mean realistically compared to the way we are currently using energy? So we covered several sectors, the economy, from the food sector, the transport sector, the industry sector, to understand what changes could we see happening there with current technology, so without any magic beans, in order to be able to achieve these ambitious targets of completely reducing emissions to zero within only 30 years. And of course, we identified a few things, but we hope to go forward, and we hope to produce after Absolute Zero. So definitely by the end of this year, we hope to produce 6 other reports for each specific sector that detail the opportunities for innovation and interventions in each one of the sectors in order to add detail to the main outline set with Absolute Zero.
Having read the report, I mean, I have to definitely tell you that it's a commendable job done looking at different sectors in detail. So what are the background data for all those reports? If I were to look at other countries' perspective as well, if someone were to start a project of this kind, something starting from fresh, how long does it take for someone to get there? Because I understand UK probably would have had a lot of data, background data, or a few other projects would have probably helped in getting to this level and then working on from here to looking at the pathways up to 2050. So what was the baseline data that you used in, say, analyzing different sectors, be it steel, cement, rail, aviation, or other sectors?
So, of course, we benefited from some previous research that we have done in our group, especially for a few sectors, namely steel and aluminium. But the data we use to create this report is just publicly available data on the UK energy uses and industrial production. So it wasn't anything extravagant or exotic. So it's just using public data with our knowledge on what has been the historic of pace of deployment of different technologies, in order to draw some conclusions out of that.
Having read the report, I also understood that certain sectors, like, for example, steel, cement, and infrastructure, manufacturing, I think there you feel that the emissions target of 2050 could actually be met. Why do you say that?
So basically, if we assume that the current legislation, the current law in the UK says that it will be illegal to produce emissions in 2050, then the only alternative that we have to have energy services is using electricity and using zero carbon electricity, so either renewables and nuclear energy. Fortunately, most industrial activities can be electrified completely. For example, steel is currently the largest industrial source of greenhouse gas emissions because it's a very energy intensive process to make steel from iron ore, especially, but also because we use lots of steel. So the global production of steel is so large that makes steel as a whole a big contributor to global emissions. But we also know that, especially in developed countries, we have been accumulating products made of steel for several decades. So we can anticipate that over the next few decades, the amount of steel scrap becoming available is going to increase substantially. So there will be a new raw material in quantity enough to supply our future demand for steel. So, and fortunately, we can recycle steel scrap into steel again using electricity. And that electricity can, of course, be produced from zero carbon sources. So therefore, we believe we can be able to keep producing steel with a smaller amount of current demand, of course. But we can be able to keep producing steel using zero carbon electricity. So without emissions. For other materials and other industries, that's also a possibility. For example, for most other industries, fossil fuels are used as a source of heat, but that can be replaced by electricity. With one particular exception, which is extremely difficult to decarbonize, which is the cement industry. So cement, most of the emissions from cement production actually come from the chemical reaction of calcination. So it's CO2 that results from a chemical reaction in the production process of cement, rather than necessarily burning fossil fuels. We, of course, also have those emissions, although those could be avoided if the process is electrified. But we can't avoid the emissions of these chemical reaction in the production of cement. So that's probably the most challenging material to decarbonize. So we need to find ways of using no cement at all, or innovate in the way we produce and use cement in the future, because that's going to be a very tricky sector to decarbonize.
That's interesting. I am not an expert in this, but I also believe like there is not much that you can extract from cement again, so that the resource efficiency of cement probably has a limiting factor to it, unlike steel or aluminium. Is that true?
Yes. So, of course, the cement is used in construction, of course. And when we look into buildings, we are realizing there is a huge opportunity to use much less cement than we are currently using for the same buildings, because buildings are being over-designed. So we are putting much more concrete than what's required to meet the current safety standards. So there are plenty of opportunities to reduce substantially the amount of cement we are using for the same end result. So just exploring those opportunities, of course, results in a substantial decrease in the future demand for concrete. These I'm talking, of course, about developed countries, countries where we already have some infrastructure in place, and we can even extend the lifetime of buildings, because most of the time when we knock down a building, it's not because the building is falling apart, but just because we no longer look like the look of the building. So we want something more modern instead of current construction. So there are certainly opportunities there also to extend the lifetime of buildings. Of course, this becomes much more tricky when we look into developing countries where most of the concrete use takes place nowadays to create new infrastructure and new buildings. Just to give you a statistic that I think sums up this challenge very well, in China, over the past 3 years, China used more concrete over the past 3 years than the United States over its entire history. Just to give you an idea of the scale of concrete that's being used currently in that part of the world to develop, to build new cities, new infrastructure. So, of course, the opportunities for savings there when new infrastructure is being created is very tricky unless we look for other alternative materials. But it's difficult to think, again, what could replace the sheer scale of use of cement and steel. So that's a really big problem there.
That's a very interesting stat about China. Now, coming back to UK, cement and steel are two sectors where the challenges are high. But as part of your analysis, what are the other sectors that where you feel the challenges to decarbonize are even complicated compared to these sectors?
Well, there are challenges also regarding some of the transport modes. For example, it's really challenging to think how we'll be able to keep flying and shipping in 2050 and make them compatible with zero emissions. For example, when we think about shipping, shipping currently uses mostly, diesel and fuel oil, but we are burning a fuel currently to make ships sail. And we can either electrify shipping, which is actually not feasible for the long distance travel that is required for shipping. And we can also explore other alternative fuels, such as ammonia. But ammonia results in very high emissions of nitrous oxide, which is a powerful air pollutant. So that's also something that won't be a feasible alternative, at least at the moment. So without, for example, nuclear propulsion, it's difficult to imagine another option to replace current shipping. However, in the case of air transport, we also see some real challenges. Solar-powered airplanes are possible. Just in 2016, a solar-powered electric airplane circumnavigated the Earth, but at very, very slow speeds and with only one passenger. So we actually can't have electric planes to replace the current airplanes that we are currently using for passenger transport. That might be feasible, but only for very short-haul flights. So other alternatives exist, for example, when we think about biofuel substitutes for kerosene used in air transport. But again, there is those biofuels face the same competition for land that food, and with an increase in the population of the Earth, we will see even greater competition for land, for food. And it's difficult to see how much more biofuel will be realistic to generate in the future without compromising the scale of growth in the demand for air travel. That probably will have to decrease substantially if it's going to be powered by these alternative technologies that currently do not exist. They are not proven yet. So this is entire speculation. So in our report in the Absolute Zero, we tried to see how the future would look like without these technologies that are currently available. And if that's the case, unfortunately, it's difficult to see how we could maintain air travel and obeying to the law in 2050 at the same time.
I'm given to understand that these are the two kind of sectors where you have clearly stated that it's not going to be possible or feasible. And it's good that you explained the reasoning behind the why you say by 2050 it's not going to be possible to decarbonize these two sectors. But you are also a little optimistic on other breakthrough technologies in the report. So you did mention about carbon capture. What are the other breakthrough technologies that you envisage in other sectors also?
Thank you. I think just going back to your previous comments, I think it's going to be very challenging to decarbonize shipping and air transport. Hopefully it will be possible, but perhaps we shouldn't be basing our decisions right now on those speculation about those possibilities, but we should be aware of the sheer reality of that impossibility with current technology. Regarding breakthrough technologies considered in our analysis, we actually didn't consider any. That was the main purpose of the report. So hopefully there will be some by 2050, such as carbon capture and storage and biofuel substitutes for kerosene, as I was mentioning. But the pace of deploying them is going to be challenging and most likely is going to limit their potential benefits. And there are some technical constraints as well. So, for example, carbon capture and storage works in specific sites where the geology is favorable to store the CO2 underground. But it's very difficult to see, for example, decentralized CCS, carbon capture and storage. So can we apply carbon capture and storage for every single steel and cement plant around the world, as decentralized as that? And the same applies for the chemical industry as well and for many other industrial facilities? Probably not. So we need to think about those technical constraints when we try to realize what's going to be the realistic scale that these breakthrough technologies might, if tested, be able to achieve in the future.
That's a valid point. I clearly agree to that. Carbon capture and storage can be a solution that fits all applications at all locations. So that's a valid point. Now, going back to the bigger picture, the entire analysis of decarbonization hinges on one crucial element, that is the electricity sector is going to be decarbonized in a big way. Recent years, the UK has kind of had more renewable energy into the grid, and there have been days when coal power plants have been totally shut down in the last few years. And that's increasing every year. So how optimistic are you or the research team of UK reaching 100% renewable energy by 2050?
One of the purposes of this report was precisely to bring up the discussion of the scale of the challenge required to meet the current law that says that we have to reduce 100% of emissions. So in this report, we use the current growth rate in renewable energy in the UK over the next 30 years. So that's going to be mostly some biofuel, but mostly wind energy, and perhaps a bit more nuclear, but we have been seeing that the deployment of nuclear energy is very slow. It takes literally decades to take decisions and to deploy new nuclear energy facilities. So how can we be able to meet these? Well, we have to make compatible the scale of change that is likely to happen with future demand. And we also have to explore all the opportunities along the supply chain of materials to improve the efficiency in which we use energy and we use materials. So just keeping the same pace of installing more renewable capacity won't be enough to electrify our current energy demand. We will need to use less energy demand by 2050 because there won't be enough renewable energy to supply our current demand for energy using the current deployment rates. So we'll have to find ways of improving the efficiency of energy conversion across many different sectors so that we are able to use less energy and so that the amount of renewables that will be available in the future will be enough to meet our needs.
That's an interesting analogy because in sharp contrast to, say, something like in a developing country where the emphasis is on increasing the energy demand to project more demand growth in electricity so that you can realistically understand the other sectors are growing. But in a developed country like UK, the emphasis is on energy efficiency and reducing demand so that you're optimizing the entire ecosystem better. That's an interesting analogy. I just thought I'll mention that. Now, you did mention about all the high points of the report and the analysis that went behind it. But from your viewpoint or from the viewpoint of all the research team involved, what do you think is the limitation of the report in its current form and how do you plan to address it as you write the other sections of the report for the whole project?
So I believe we will have to understand in much more detail what's going to be needed in each sector in order to, and what are the opportunities for innovation in different sectors so that we face up the challenge of meeting zero emissions. So how can we combine a reduction in the demand for services, for example, how can we, regarding transport, how can we travel less? And perhaps how can we change the modes of transport that we use the most? For example, how can we use less passenger car and more rail and cycling, which are the most efficient transport modes? So how can we change the configuration of all those systems so that we create a system that's compatible with the amount of renewable energy that we expect that will be available within 30 years? That's the big challenge, and that's what we need to understand better. I also forgot to mention another key technology that is presented as a breakthrough, which is hydrogen. So hydrogen is another very good example. Hydrogen is currently done, manufactured from natural gas reforming. So, and of course, that's not a carbon neutral way of producing hydrogen. But even if we have renewable electricity, we could produce hydrogen using a process called electrolysis, using renewable electricity. But the greatest problem is that only 23% of the energy used in electrolysis actually ends up moving a fuel cell vehicle, for example. So it's a very, very inefficient process and a very inefficient chain of energy transformation. So first, we have to use electricity to produce hydrogen and then use that hydrogen in a fuel cell to make a car or a vehicle move. So that compared, for example, with the overall efficiency of a battery vehicle, an electric battery vehicle, that one has a much greater efficiency overall than using hydrogen. And if we are producing hydrogen with renewable electricity and we have a shortage of renewable electricity, that's probably not the most efficient way of using the limited amount of renewable electricity that we expect to have available within 30 years. So it's this kind of choices that we need to make, and we need to to have clarity on the choices and clarity on the implications of the options that are on the table.
A good point about hydrogen, especially, and as you rightly said, you need to weigh the pros and cons between, say, a hydrogen and a battery electric vehicle, and especially in a long-term forecast like this, to see what is the feasibility of having a transport economy running on hydrogen versus a battery electric vehicle. So that's a good point. Andrew, on a final note, I mean, reports and analysis, studies like this, I have definitely a bigger purpose. And especially in this, it is going to serve a bigger purpose of how the UK government adapts the report and looks into the study and implements the various recommendations that the report comes up with in the due course. So how receptive is the UK government to this study? This is just the first report of many reports that are going to come. But what has the response been so far?
Thank you. Actually, we were surprised by the impact that this report is having, because the impact was already far greater than what we could have imagined. And generated a great momentum for change. Just to give you an example, the House of Lords in the UK debated this report for an entire afternoon. That's, of course, a fascinating impact that we didn't realize when we wrote it. And we are reaching companies and industry with this report because we want to be... because they want to be prepared for zero carbon. Just look at what happened with the third runway in Heathrow Airport. So the Heathrow expansion project has been cancelled because the courts decided that the third runway in Heathrow was incompatible with the current law that says that we have to reduce 100% of emissions within the next 30 years. So this has huge financial implications for our partners working on this project. And of course, by thinking about emissions, we can make sensible strategic recommendations to our industrial partners and also to the policymakers. And that's how we expect to keep creating impact with this kind of work.
That's a good point that you bring about the cancellation of the Heathrow Third Runway project. Because, I mean, it has been in the news, but the genesis or the story or the background behind that was not something that everyone would have probably read about. And it's good that you mentioned about that. Andrew, it's been a pleasure. So thanks for taking time, and thanks for taking time to share your views on the report. As a podcast, Mission Chunya aims to cover stories on the transition to the zero carbon economy. And it's one of the first few episodes where I have a guest who's talking about this transition to a zero carbon economy from a government's viewpoint, or rather what the UK aims to do or plans to do in this. So it's a good story that I managed to cover, and thank you for taking time to do this.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, I hope you like the discussion on this episode. I also guess you got a high-level understanding of the trajectories for different sectors to decarbonize. Why is it easy to decarbonize the steel sector in general, or in comparison to the cement sector? And why will aviation and shipping be the last and pose a major challenge for the governments to reach net zero? To know more about UK's plans and the findings from the report, please find the link to the report on the show notes section of the podcast. 2 weeks from now, we will be back with yet another episode, so make sure you subscribe to the podcast. And if you have been following Mission Chunya, why not spread the word? It just takes 30 seconds to share the podcast to 3 people in your network. So please consider doing that. So with that, signing off, this is Girish Shivakumar, and thank you for listening.